Welcome back to another episode of Stadium Junkie. I am Barry, owner of the Green Bay Packers, and I am ready to roll out episode 3 for you. This will be the first of a two-part series in which I will be breaking down the AFC side. These are my predictions on who I think will be making the playoffs, who I think will be missing the playoffs. Next week, I'll get you caught up on the NFC side. Later in the episode, I have myself an interview with the most interesting Brit on the planet. And I will give you my perspective on something I like to call team awareness. And then we'll finish off with a segment I like to call IFL Just Don't Give a Fuck. All right, let's jump right into it. And I would like to give a quick disclaimer for my predictions. I did not take into account scheduling at all. I didn't look at each team's schedule. I view this somewhat like golf, to where it doesn't matter who you're playing, you can only focus on your score, what you can do. You can't control what your opponent is doing. So I would like to let everyone know that I broke down each division based on multiple categories. I looked at few categories and who had the best at each position, and I ranked it 1 through 4 within your own division. 1 being best in the division, 4th being worst in the division. So the categories I broke down were quarterback, offense, which includes your starting 5 of running back, tight end, wide receiver, whatever you're rolling with. D-line, which includes D-tackles and defensive ends, linebackers, and then I got defensive backs, and then my special teams category, which will be offensive line, head coach, punters, kickers, and then last but definitely not least is depth. Keep in mind that I will not be going too in-depth with each team's roster because I feel like Luke did a very good job of that in his coverage of State of the IFL articles, where he goes in-depth with each team and really, really breaks down who will be specifically starting for each team. I myself just looked and assumed who I figured each team would be starting, but there's no reason to go super in-depth with everyone. So we're going to start off with the AFC North. And I'm just going to break down first off where I think this division is going to end up. I have in last place the Bengals, and third the Steelers. Finishing second is Kyle and the Browns. And taking first place in the division for the second year in the row, I have Matt with the Ravens. And why do I have Matt with the Ravens first? Well, he's crushing in every category I have within his own division. I have him as having the best quarterback in his division. Brady, you know, you got Cleveland having Goff, Spencer with Wentz, and Danny with Luck. So Matt's got the best QB right off the bat. And then the other categories he's leading in are offense, number 1. He has the best linebacking core. He has the best secondary with safeties and corners. The most important thing to win in this league is having a strong offense, a strong D-line as in defensive ends, and linebackers. Matt is leading in 2 of those 3 categories. So I think this is going to be the big difference maker. He's rolling out Kareem Hunt. He's rolling out Gronk, Jimmy Graham. And I know there's been some discussion about Tate. We'll see what happens with that. He's got himself a Jai. So I think this is the best offense to start we got Cleveland having Freeman, Cooper, Hilton, Ingram, and Jones. So what is going to keep Kyle somewhat close in this is his ridiculous defensive line. Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack, and he's got Clark at D-tackle. This is one of the best D-lines in the AFC, and it's probably a top five defensive line in the league. And just this alone is why I have Kyle finishing second. I have him within his own division, second in offense, second with defensive backs, number one special teams, but that's not very weighted very much. So I think Kyle finishes second. I do not have him as a wild card team because some of the other divisions, players missing playoffs, are going to have some good squads. So another takeaway I have from this division is Danny. And Danny, the reason I have him finishing last in the division is because I have him finishing last in just about every category within his own division, except for quarterback. I have him ranked third, and I have Kyle's last with Goff. So one thing I noticed about Danny's team right away is AJ Green and Tyreek. We have AJ at 18 mil, we have Tyreek at 19 mil. Both of these players are on one-year contracts. There will be some big injuries this year, just like there is every year, and some of those will happen at wide receiver. There will be a big contract player to go down, and someone is going to need to fill those shoes. Tyreek and AJ Green are great trade bait for Danny because I don't see him competing for the division this year, so I think it's smart for him to potentially move these pieces and build on the future next year. So that's one thing I noticed with that team is he's got the trade bait to improve at least. Let's hope he makes the right decision with that. Moving on to the AFC East, and this is one of the most exciting divisions in all of the league because we got my favorite rivalry, we got Brad, and we got Mark. Now, this division could go either way, to be honest, but let's just lay out my rankings real quick. First, coming in first in the division, I'm going to have Mark. Second, who I have as a wildcard team, and a team that could easily flip-flop in with Mark and be the winner of this division, I have Brad. Now, something that I have that my others may find surprising, third, I'm going to have the Jets. I see Corey pulling up third. I like what he's done in the offseason. And to finish it out, I have the Bills finishing fourth. So, why do I have the rankings the way I do? Well, to keep it short, Gurley, Kamara, Devontae Adams, Barkley, Fournette, and Michael Thomas. This is just too nasty of a five, and he's got the sixth, and he's got the seventh. It's just too much to handle. As good as Brad's team is, because Brad's offense is nothing to scoff at. He's got Zeke, he's got Mixon, he's got the number one wide receiver, he's got a top two tight end in Kelce, and another top five tight end in Walker. He's just stacked as well. He's just going against someone who I have as one of the best offensive teams we've seen maybe ever. And yeah, it's just on paper thus far, but I have a feeling it's gonna be put into action later this year. Now, one thing that Brad has that might keep him in this as a potential chance to overtake Mark and win, get first in this division, is his defensive line. He has a better defensive line than Mark. I have Brad as the second best defensive line in his division, and I have Mark's at third. I think as good as J.J. Watt has proven to be, J.J. Watt is a little bit of a question mark just because of all the injuries he's had. And then Mark also has Trey Flowers, and he's going to be rolling out with most likely Eddie Goldman at D-tackle, but he'll be switching it up. And then what Brad's rocking is DeMarcus Lawrence, and I think Danielle Hunter will be the big question mark. Danielle Hunter can have himself a huge year, then I think there's a decent chance Mark doesn't win this division and the Dolphins finish first place. Now, why do I have Corey ahead of Travis? Well, other than his quarterback, who he's rolling Breeze, Travis is, I have him as fourth in offense. I have him as fourth at linebacker. These are two key positions. I also have him fourth at depth. So if he gets hit with an injury bug at all, then this team could be a 4 or 5 win team, if I'm being honest. You can't be rolling out there with the worst linebacking core and the worst offense in your league and in your division and expect to compete when you got teams rolling out the heavy artillery offense that Brad and Mark are rolling out. So to round out the AFC East, I have Mark on top and I have Brad as a strong playoff team in the wild card. And fantasy, it doesn't matter who wins the division and who wins the wild card, except for bragging rights. As long as you're getting in the playoffs, there's no true home field advantage. So unless you're truly afraid to match up against someone else, it wouldn't matter about seeding. But I don't see Braz being afraid to tackle anybody. So that'll be it for the first half of my AFC rankings. On the other side of the break, I have an interview with the most interesting Brit, and then I will take down the other half of the AFC. All right, stay tuned. Hey, this the East Side Johnny Big Redemption light. Know what I'm talking about? Hold up. Whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, I am proud to have with me the 2017 AFC East champion, and he hopes to take down IFL this year, Mark with the Patriots. Happy to have you on, Mark.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, mate. It's nice to be in like a similar time zone for once.
Right? This is the international overseas episode. So jumping right into it, looking at your team, you have one hell of an offense. How exactly does a GM end up with Barkley, Fournette, Gurley, and Kamara?
Not being afraid to take risks and not being afraid to be like really honest with yourself and like your roster and where you're going. So the Gurley situation was a buy low. So I had the faith. I was sure that he would bounce back. I was sure that he wasn't just a bad player that everybody was then saying. I remember he's going the second round of like, of drafts that people were doing just like weekly, and I was like, he's gonna bounce back. So I took a risk on Gurley with that fat salary that nobody wanted, and then Fournette, Kamara, and Barkley. I suppose that's just one of those things where it's like, do research, you know you guys who are coming into the league, because then if you realize, you know what, running backs are the key to winning this league, then when I look at the college when I look at college players, those are the ones I need to be looking at. Those are the classes I need to be looking at. So that's what I started doing when I realized my team wasn't very good. Like, how do I solve it? And usually the best way is through the draft, but only if the players that you kind of need will be in those draft classes. So that's how I ended up with like Fournette, Kamara, like Cook, obviously last year, that I flipped for Barkley this year. But yeah, just investing in the right classes, I suppose, is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, I think you've done an insane job with that offense, and it's probably one of the best we've seen. And anyone going against it is probably shaking in their boots for the offense, at least. So last year, you were knocked out by your bitter rival, Brad.
Yeah.
And overall, you are 1-4 against him. So why is this year different for the Patriots? Not only getting over that hump and knocking out Brad possibly in the playoffs, but becoming champion of the league.
So Brad always builds a very well-rounded roster. And as part of my sort of rebuild, I'd said that what I wanted to do last year was just really invest in the offense and get that back up into like a decent shape. And then I would work on the defense as best I possibly could. But I'd always said that I just wanted to have a winning record last year. And then I really wanted to challenge for the playoffs this year. As it happened, I won the AFC East last year and made the playoffs. So this year, I'm a year ahead of schedule. But the biggest thing, the off season was turning around my defense, like having a more balanced roster. And I feel now like with my linebackers, the safeties like Rashard Jones, people like that, and Trey Flowers kicking on, I've got a much more balanced roster than I did before. And I think now I'm in a position where I can take on Brad because player for player, I think my defense is in a position where it can take him on, where last year it really couldn't. And I suffered because of that when I played him.
Yeah, you really do have as far as defense go, you have a very strong linebacking core as well. And as we all know, that is one of the biggest positions to key in on as far as building a good team. Yeah. So I want to hear a little bit about, there was a lot of talk going about when you had no quarterback.
Yeah.
So I'd like you to explain a little bit about what happened with free agency, why maybe, I don't know, about cap issues, but I know Rodgers was out there. So essentially what happened and how you ended up with Jameis, and do you plan on sticking with that throughout the season?
Yeah, I just got it wrong, to be honest. I realized pretty early on that I was getting bit up quite a lot on my players. So I'd had a deal that I'd discussed with the GM before the auction, and I probably should have taken the deal at the time because it was a really nice salary, but I was that this player was on. It was a decent quarterback, but I wanted to see what was being there in free agency. But then I soon realized, as I say, that I was getting bit up on quite a lot. So I tried to get a bit too smart, I think is the best way of putting it. And I started trying to do deals for players that people were already bidding on the board, and then saying, well, if you win him, I'll offer you this, or we'll try and do a deal. And I was too preoccupied doing that, I think, than bidding on players or bidding on those quarterbacks, which I should have been doing. And then by the end of it, I got myself I backed myself into a corner, basically, and I was in a bad situation. So it's not ideal that I had to basically give away pretty much all of my 2020 picks. But I do like Jameis. I know Brad brought up, he did actually offer me in for a seventh months ago. But I thought I could get better value in the auction. And I suppose one of those things, sometimes you just need to commit with the money a little bit and not be too scared to just pay a premium on people. And I suppose that was what I suffered from. So Jameis, I've always liked, though. I had him in Mordor as well. And you know, I'm pretty confident that he'll be serviceable enough to sort of run me through the season.
As a quarterback, he's all right, but the fact that they're going to be down almost all the games and he'll be throwing as much as he will,
yeah,
he'll definitely be a fantasy relevant in fantasy, no doubt.
Yeah.
So I talk a little bit later in this episode about awareness and knowing where you are as a team. And yeah, the first year, you, after building your team, there was almost a quick sell-off and you took a lot of flack for it.
Yeah.
But now, looking where you're at, it's clear that it's very important to understand how your team is built and whether you need to sell off or whether you need to, you know, go all in and bring in the talent.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about to the younger GMs, what's your best advice for becoming a new GM in the league, essentially?
Yeah. Just I suppose it's one of those things where we're all in this to win it. That's essentially the biggest thing. And look at your roster, and if you're the roster you've got, like, I feel like some people are just know when you think you've got a winning roster or not. Like I got, what was it, after the first week, I knew that running back premium in this league I hadn't taken into account enough. I didn't have the players that I needed. And so then the first thing you do is that you look at, like, okay, I know there's a couple of pretty good players coming up in the draft. So I had a look at that, and then I decided, okay, well, if I don't do it now, all these picks that are out there, like other people are going to start blowing up their rosters. So I need to get the jump on them. So just be honest with yourself. It's like, well, I could wait till week 4. I could wait till week 5. But it's like, you know, just be honest. Like, do I think this roster is going to win? No. Fine. Then what are we doing? You know, what are we doing this for if it's not going to win? So that's what I did. I just was like, it's embarrassing because it's like 2-3 months into the start of the league. But sometimes you just got to be, I was just honest with myself. It's like, I've just built like a really bad roster. So I did what I thought was the best way. I just blew it up, invested in what I thought was going to be a really good draft class with really good running backs. And then go from there and just flip everybody, not being afraid to like just trade everything away. I think last season I had a quick look at it and I've traded away every single player that I had from that original auction except Devontae Adams. He's the only player that remains.
Really? He's the only one you have from the original team?
Yeah, he is the only one. But and then I suppose the second piece, just be like, is not like be brave, but like don't be afraid to be like the first one through the wall. Like, you know, if you're going to crack and you're going to give up and everybody will give you flack, like, just take it on the chin. Just say like, yeah, all right, yeah, I don't mind. Because you've got to know that as long as you think your roster's heading the right direction by doing that, then that's absolutely fine. But some people give you flack for not wanting to compete. But as long as you feel that if you're going to do this, you will compete at a certain point. And I'd say,
yeah, exactly. It's not about not wanting to compete. It's about, you know, you are competing. You're just competing for the future. And as far as the biggest takeaway of that, from that is the honesty. You know, it's one thing to go into chat and tell everyone that you're going to win, but you, at the end of the day, as long as you're honest with yourself, and you know, you could just say you're gonna win the division, but if you know in your head like, oh, I don't know if I have the best squad this year, you know, moving forward, making whatever deals you can is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't think you're gonna win it this year, then what are you doing it for? You know, and if you don't exactly. think you win, then how are you gonna win? And my tactic was, I need to just start again. Some people, it's like, oh, I need to get this player and this player. Some people, they'll just go, oh, well, I'll, if I can just get a couple of, you know, but it's like, realistically, do you still think that when someone goes to you, I just want to make the playoffs. It's like, well, what's the point? You should be like, you should want to win. Because if you're not trying to win this year, then blow it up, start again. That's my view on it. I want to win this. And making the playoffs isn't good enough for me, you know?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. Yeah, just that's the way I always look at it. I do agree.
Getting that title, winning it all, that should be everyone's motive and everyone's number one goal.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would like to play a quick game of fuck, marry, kill. I'm going to toss out three names for you within the league, within your conference. Fuck, marry, kill, Brad, Matt, and Dean.
Fucking hell. Okay, I'm going to have to kill Dean. Sorry, Dean. I cannot marry the Raven. So I'm going to have to fuck the Raven. And then it looks like love has come from an uncertain place and I'm going to marry Brad.
Yeah, a love and hate relationship, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be a rocky road.
It would.
You know, imagine the fantasy teams we could build together.
It would be pretty much unstoppable. So last question I'll let you go with, and something obviously I've been asking everybody, is out of all the stadiums, and it's not limited to just football, what stadium have you been to that you love most and you would recommend everyone to go to?
It's a good question. I think the place you're currently in at the moment has got a stadium called the Nou Camp.
Oh yeah.
So have you gone to it yet?
No, I went by it during a tour and Barcelona was out of town, so I wasn't able to go to a game. But I drove by it and it looked really nice.
Yeah, it is an amazing stadium. So I suppose you've got two, really. It's a Nou Camp because you're in Barcelona at the moment. It's about 100,000. It's a beautiful stadium. And the funny thing is, it's like, it's so high, so they're all uncovered stadiums. But in Spain, so in soccer, it's like it's known for people to travel, and you have away fans, people that will travel hundreds of miles to go and watch their team play in another team stadium. In Spain, they don't have that quite as much. You tend to only get a few fans that will travel, maybe 300, 400, 500. And in the Nou Camp, what's quite funny is they put them in right at the top, and this thing is very high and very steep, in the far top corner of this massive stadium, so they get the worst view. They're out of reach of everybody, and you can barely hear them. But the Nou Camp is a special stadium, a really, really special stadium, because of all the different soccer players that have played there, like Ronaldo, Romario, Johan Cruyff, like, and then there's just something about the Nou Camp that's really, really special.
Oh, you're really making me wish I was able to go to a game right now.
Yeah, well, even if you can't go to a game, like, it's just, if any of you guys are in town, like, it's worth going to the even just going and do the stadium tour, and then they'll take you around the trophy room, and you realize like how successful that team has been. And then I suppose the other part as well is that they have different Barcelona teams. So they have a basketball team that will have played the Madrid team that Luka Doncic, who's just got drafted by the Mavs, who he would have played for as well. So it's really interesting. So the Nou Camp, I suppose, and it's really old. The Nou Camp is built in the 50s, I think. But yeah, it's an amazing stadium. Definitely worth looking at. And
I definitely like that answer. It's a unique one that I'm sure no one else will give. So I really appreciate having you on, Mark. And I wish you the best of luck this season.
And you?
I expect to see you and Brad in the playoffs once again, battling out for the ship.
Should be fun, mate. Good luck in the north. And hope Sonny gets well soon.
Oh, yeah. Nick's going down. You best believe that.
Yeah. Well, it should be a good matchup between you two, so we look forward to seeing it.
Appreciate it. Have yourself a good one.
You too, man. Bye-bye. I'm buzzing, dirty dozen, naughty rotten rhymer. Cursing that you play is worse than Marty Schottenheimer. You whacking in the motherfucker you bitch your style from. You ain't gonna sell 2 copies if you press a double album. Admit it, fuck it, while we coming out in the open. I'm doing acid, crack, smack, coke, and smoking dope then. My name is Marshall Mathers, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marshall.
I have a disease and they don't know what to call it. Better hide your wallet, cause I'm coming up quick to strip your cash. Bought a ticket to your concert just to come and whip your ass. Bitch, I'm coming out swinging so fast that'll make your eyes spin. You getting knocked the fuck out like Mike Tyson. The proof is in the pudding, the stats to Sean Holtman. I slit your motherfucking throat worse than Ron Goldman. So when you see me on your block with 2 blocks screaming fuck the world like Tupac, just don't give a fuck. Talking that shit behind my back, Dirty Mac, and telling your boys that I'm on crack, just don't give a fuck. So put my tape back on the rack, go run and tell your friends my shit is whack. I just don't give a fuck. But see me on the street and duck,
going into the 2018 season, there are a few things that I feel like I need to remind you about. Some things that the IFL, frankly, just doesn't give a fuck about. So remember, when you're logging into Slack and you're typing a message talking about how you only lost by 1 point or 0.5, guess what? IFL don't give a fuck. If you're coming into our chat and you're talking about how you did in other leagues and what your record is in other leagues or how many points you scored this week in other leagues, guess what? IFL just don't give a fuck. If you're going to come at me with how good your DraftKings team did this week and how you scored 180 points, guess what? IFL just don't give a fuck. Just remember, if you just start spitting out excuses after coming to realize that you started an injured player who was being looked at all week long, and you didn't realize that that player is injured and he's in your starting lineup, and you want to bitch about it, guess what? IFL just don't give a fuck. So remember, when you go into that chat, make sure it's about IFL. Because if it's not about IFL, then I just don't give a fuck. Now that I got that out of my system, it's time to dive into the rest of my AFC predictions, and I will begin with the West. Although this might be the worst division in all of the IFL, I still will give it the respect of breaking it down. Now, are you ready, IFL? For the first time in IFL history, I have Kurt winning his division and making the playoffs. I have Chiefs and Kurt finishing first, Denver with the Broncos finishing second, Prendo and the Raiders finishing third, and poor injury-riddled Decker finishing fourth. Now, why is this the year of Kurt? Well, I have Kurt winning in maybe not the most important category, like offense, because if you take a look at Denver, he has leaps and bounds the best offense with Russell Wilson, Le'Veon Bell, Duke Johnson, Deion Lewis, Baldwin, Julio Jones. He's got a good offense going for him. The problem is his defense is too weak. And this defense, unless he makes some changes, will not be enough to win this division. You take a look at what Kurt has, and I have him ranked first in his division in defensive line, linebackers, and defensive backs. All the defense, Kurt crushes David. So you take a look at these defensive ends, Myles Garrett and Cameron Jordan. It's a hell of a combo, and it's going to put up some major points this year. Take a look at the linebackers. He's got Deion Jones, he's got Sean Lee, he's got Bobby Wagner. That's a really strong three right there. And then he definitely has some others who will be fighting for that fourth spot. But you take a look at what Denver has, and he has Telvin, but there's a big drop off after Telvin. He's got Nigel Bradham, and I feel like there's a big gap there. You take a look at the secondary, and Kurt has Keanu Neal, who is a top three safety in the league, at fantasy at least. And he's got Adrian Amos. And although he doesn't have too much depth with the defensive backs, I still think that his overall defense has what it takes to win this division. Also, I have Denver having not a whole lot of depth. So if someone like Le'Veon or someone like Julio goes down, it's going to be detrimental to this team. And I don't know if it can recover. So, yes, Kurt, I know you have a smile on your face. I finally having you make the playoffs. And second place, Broncos, I do not having make the playoffs. I do not believe it's a wild card team. I think this is a 8-8, maybe 9-7 team, but it's just not going to be enough to make the playoffs. Now you look at some of the other teams. Let's look at the Raiders. Something I noticed right here is Odell Beckham, although he is at $25 million, there's 1 year left on this contract. This is a piece that can be moved for draft picks, and this is a piece that should be moved for draft picks because this is not going to be the year for Prendo, and he has the opportunity to build on his future. So I really think that the smartest thing Prendo could do is move Odell at his peak this season and get a lot back for him. And what else is there to say about Decker? The guy's got a killer QB core with Watson and Rodgers, but he's just taken too many injuries that I just don't see this team really competing in 2018. So let's see what he can do to move some pieces. I do not see too many players, big name players, or who are on their last year of their contract who he could flip for more picks. Oh, actually, he does have Melvin Ingram. So he does have a top defensive end that he could potentially move. Melvin's is only at $10 million, and he's on his last year of his contract. So this is a piece that can be moved for more talent. And I think the best move for Decker would be to move someone like this and gain some more value. And, you know, maybe not only focus on the draft, because because this kitty farm is getting a little bit out of control, Decker. All right. Now, last but definitely not least is the AFC South. And this is maybe one of the most exciting divisions to watch throughout the season. I kept going back and forth on who I had winning this division. Did I have Eric? Did I have Jason? Both of these teams are very well put together. But I think I got to give it to the defending champ. And I'm going to have Eric taking down this division. And I'm going to have Jason finishing right behind him. And Jason could easily win this division. He has built himself a really good team, bouncing back from his poor 2017 campaign. I think that no matter who wins this division, second place will be the other wild card. So you have the wild cards coming from the AFC East and the AFC South, in my opinion. So let's jump into it real quick on why I think Eric wins this division. And it's going to come down to the offense and the defensive line, which I have Eric as the best offense in his division, and I have his defensive line the best in his division. And that's the main reason why I'm going to have him winning the division. I mean, he's trotting out Melvin Gordon, Alex Collins, he's got Sony, he's got Keenan Allen, he's got Mike Evans. I just think that this is the team that is going to be the biggest threat maybe in the AFC. You have to give respect to the defending champ. And you take a look at this D-line, Chandler Jones and Joey Bosa. This is very, very elite D-line, probably the best D-line in the AFC. I think it'd be tough to find a better defensive line. Now, I don't think that Jason's team is anything to look at negatively. You know, he's got Dalvin, he's got McKinnon, he's got David Johnson. You know, depending on how Josh Gordon does, that could maybe be the difference maker. He's got Ertz. He's got a lot of talent on his team. And the one major thing that I think Jason has better than Eric, and it's pretty undeniable, is his linebacking core. You know, he's rolling out Tremaine Edmonds, who's probably going to have a good year, Christian Kirksey, Blake Martinez, and we'll see how Tahir and Avery can do. But I have Jason as the best linebacking core in his division, and I have Eric as the worst linebacking core in his division. So if Jason does make playoffs, it's going to be because his linebacking core is that much better than Eric's, but his offense is either right behind it, or who knows, it could even be better because he has a very good offense too. He's just, I think, lacking in an elite quarterback territory. Maybe you can move something around and get to improve a little bit on Stafford, but nonetheless, I think Jason is a playoff team. You know, a 10 plus win playoff team. Now, another possible surprise, I have, actually, this is not a surprise to the majority of the league, I have Dean finishing in fourth in the division, and I have Nasty Nate finishing third. Now, this will be the third year that I don't believe Nate makes playoffs, but I do see him moving forward this year. I do like his team. I just think that he's in too tough a division. I mean, he's up against defending champ and, well, two champions, and that's a lot to ask for. So I think he competes. You know, I think the Jaguars are an 8-win team, something along those lines. I just don't think his team is good enough to make playoffs this year. And Dean, you're not making playoffs this year. I think the sooner you realize that, the better it's going to be for your organization moving forward. I think you should move some players to get some picks, because I just don't see you making playoffs. I see Greg Olsen on a one-year deal. That's someone who could be moved for some talent after maybe he has a few good games, because his value isn't as high as it can be. Depending on how McCoy does, although he is at $30 million, there will be someone willing to trade some cap space and give up something for McCoy if he's out there putting up good numbers. Now, two things that could surprise people with Dean is depending on how Chris Carson does, I believe, and I think Frank Gore is still a question at this point. The guy has yet to prove that he cannot. He has yet to show us that he can't get it done. You know, he is a perennial all-star, and he's out there year in, year out, just eating up all the carries he can, and just out there dominating. So I do think that Dean has very good depth, and that will be something that could potentially keep him in if his opponents in his division get hit with the injury bug, which is very well possible. We definitely know how injuries work in IDP, you know, whatever you see now as your starting linebackers. That's not what's going to happen. You're not going to set the same lineup week 8, week 9, let alone the end of the year, because injuries eat people up. Shout out to Mr. Fuck Your Face Rando. Well, that is my predictions for the AFC. I have Eric winning the division. I have Kurt winning the division. I have Mark winning the division. And I have Matt winning the division. And my two wildcard teams, which these are not wildcard teams. I think these two wildcard teams will be better than whatever wildcard teams come out of the NFC, to be honest, which I have Brad and I have Jason. So that is it for my AFC side of the predictions. Next week I will have my NFC side. And if you don't like my predictions, do something about it and make some trades, make your team better, and prove me wrong. You know, that's all I can really say about that. There's one more topic that I wanted to touch on to wrap up this episode, and that is team awareness. Having team awareness is extremely important if you want to be successful in this year or in future years. It's important to know where you're at. Just because you're starting 2-5 in a particular year does not mean you need to sell immediately. It's okay to recognize how your team is doing, who is left on your schedule, maybe just in the first couple weeks with the double headers, you got unlucky and you dropped a 3-15 or something and you're starting out 0-2. There's still signs you can find to see that your team has not yet gone down the shitter. Because to be honest, almost every season I've started with a losing record for the first four games. So it's really important to recognize what kind of team you've had and what your future can hold in that particular season. On the other side of the spectrum, it's very important to know when it's just not your year. Even if it's before the season, going into the season, you need to know that there are teams who think they will be in it and will be willing to give up lots to improve their team. That's where you come in and you improve your team on the future. If you want to be successful and you're not successful at the moment, you're going to need to build for the future. So don't be afraid to move that big piece and hear everyone trash you saying that you just gave up on the season. No, it's having team awareness and knowing where you are at as a franchise in accordance with your own division and your chances of making playoffs. There are some elite teams in this league. If you aren't even in the same stratosphere with these teams and you're averaging like a 250 through the first few weeks, then you need to know that you don't have the team that you need to compete this year, and you need to move some pieces to improve and get some young guys, get some draft picks. If you are a winning team, it's important when to know to add more talent to your roster to compete with the teams that are still better than you. I have not done this in the past. I've, in most of my years, it's important for me to not only compete now, but compete for the future. So sometimes I will give away players when I just get an offer that I can't turn down. While not completely selling out on the season, I am still hurting my odds of becoming champion in 1 year. At the same time, though, that keeps me always competing for the next year. The last 2 years, I've had two first-round draft picks. Now let's take a look at a different team, like Washington, a team that has not made the playoffs in 2 years. And what does the new GM do? Trade away the first-round draft picks. That's going to hurt that team. That's going to set that team back for a few years. And I don't think that's great team awareness. Just worrying about getting in the playoffs when you're a team who hasn't sniffed playoffs yet. And you're trading away future assets just to get in this year when you're already not in a position to do that. The Cowboys have been on top in that division. There's a reason that the Washington franchise has not made playoffs yet. It's because it's not as good as the other franchises in that division. So take notes from the Washington franchise if you have not done so already, and take a look at your team and see where it's been in the past, where it can be going in the future, and let's try and make the right and smart decisions for our own franchise. If we're not looking like a superior team, then maybe it's time, when the time comes, to move the pieces. Could I be in that position? Maybe. Maybe I have a bad start, and I could see the writing on the wall, and I'll have to trade pieces away. Maybe I have a great start, and I say, hey, I'm going to move some picks and gain some more talent because things are looking good this year. It all depends on where you're at and where you see your team going in the future. That is going to wrap up the third ever episode of Stadium Junkie. I would like to thank Mark for coming on the show for an interview in my special international edition. And next week I'll be breaking down the NFC side, and it will be my last episode before we finally get to kick off and start this bitch. So thanks for listening as always. Until next time. La, 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 wait till I get my money right. I had a dream I could buy my way to heaven. When I awoke, I spent that on a necklace. I told God I'd be back in a second. Man, it's so hard not to act reckless. To whom much is given, much is tested. Get arrested, guess until he get the message. I feel the pressure under more scrutiny. And what I do, act more stupidly. Bought more jewelry, more Louis V. My mama couldn't get through to me. The drama, people suing me. I'm on TV talking like it's just you and me. I'm just saying how I feel, man. I ain't one of the Cosbys, I ain't go to Hill, man. I guess the money should have changed them. I guess I should have forgot where I came from. Wait till I get my money. You saying something? You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing. Let up the suicide doors. This is my life, homie. You decide yours. I know that Jesus died for us, but I couldn't tell you who decided.